The poet Emily Dickinson once wrote, "We never know how high we are till we are called to rise. And then, if we are true to plan, our statures touch the skies." Which is really saying that we don't actually know what we're made of. We don't know how strong we are until we're tested, until we're hit with some kind of adversity in life. It could be the loss of a loved one, an illness, it could be financial hardship, divorce, any number of things that come along in life to sort of set us back on our heels. And when we go through that time, when we're going through that difficult time, we may find that we have to dig much deeper within ourselves to find the strength and the resilience that we need to get through it. And then later we look back on it and we wonder, how did I do that? And how did I get through that difficult time? I'm sure there are times in your life when you look back and you just marvel at how you made it through. Well, how we made it through is by tapping into that wellspring of wisdom and power and perseverance within us at the very core of our being, those God-given abilities to rise to any challenge and overcome it. Well, nevertheless, I realize that many of us would be quite happy to not have any more challenges in our lives, like, you know, haven't I had enough already kind of thing, but life doesn't work that way. Challenges are an integral part of life, and they are ongoing. And our challenges serve a purpose. They're how we grow. Everything we go through grows us, just as the song says. As we've said before here at Unity Renaissance, the seeming obstacle on your path is not in your way. It is the way. You see, those obstacles, those challenges are our stepping stones for growing and learning and evolving and awakening. Here's how Eckhart Tolle says it. He says, "The world isn't here to make you happy. It's here to make you conscious. And how does it do that? It does it by challenging you. And it's doing it now." Well, amen to that. Right? I mean, we're all being challenged right now by this pandemic. It's stirring up all kinds of fear. It's got us on hyper alert. You know, we're all just so aware of distance and being around other people and that kind of thing. It's also prompting a lot of, I think, of self-reflection. People are beginning to evaluate their lives, their professions, how they live, etc. And it's also spurring an interest in history. As people look for role models, well, how did other people get through times of crises? I've been particularly wondering how other people in the past dealt with the experience of living in isolation. And on that front, the person who comes to mind is Anne Frank. Now, I realize that it may be presumptuous and perhaps even in some ways inappropriate to draw any kind of comparison between what Anne Frank and her family went through with what we are going through with this pandemic. Certainly, there's no comparison, really, between our situation and the terrifying conditions that led Anne and her family and another family and a friend to go into hiding in Amsterdam to escape the Nazis. This is not about making some kind of comparison or trying to equalize those two things, but nevertheless, I believe there are some amazing lessons that we can learn from Anne Frank, not only about how to live when sequestered, but how to live, period. And so today I offer her story in that spirit, in that idea of providing some insight and inspiration, and perhaps the opportunity to see our own situation a little bit differently. So Anne and this group of seven went into hiding in Amsterdam in 1942 for more than 2 years. More than 2 years, they lived in isolation in a secret annex behind the building where Anne's father had his business. In some ways, they faced challenges similar to what we're facing as we stay at home and live in isolation. Food had to be stockpiled. It was provided by intermediaries. The parents had to supervise the children's schoolwork, because obviously they weren't going to school. Hair had to be cut by amateurs, whoever was willing to do it or could do it. And sometimes relationships got a little tense in those closed quarters, and I'm sure none of you is experiencing that in your homes right now. But it did happen for them, and occasionally, you know, tempers would flare. They were very, very careful in their situation also to monitor and to be very diligent in caring for any medical condition that came up, so there would be no risk of anyone having to go to the hospital. Well, we can relate to that, can't we? But at the same time, the restrictions on this group that was in hiding were so much more severe than anything that we are experiencing. The risks were so much higher. They had absolutely no freedom to come and go as they pleased. They were confined to that area for more than 2 years. And after 3 months in hiding, Anne Frank wrote this in her diary. She said, "Not being able to go outside upsets me more than I can say. And I'm terrified our hiding place will be discovered and that we'll be shot." She knew that the mere act of coughing or peeping out the window during the day could be fatal for all of them. So in her diary, she reveals some of the practices in their group that kind of helped them manage through their time. This is something I was particularly interested in. Like, how did they get through the days? And she shares that they set up schedules for meals and for rest and for bathroom times. Says they set aside a little time each day for calisthenics, to do exercises. And they spent many hours reading. She wrote that they kept their sense of humor. She shared some of the playfulness. And they came up with games to play to pass the time. Well, in my research, I came across a little video that I'd like to share that I found absolutely fascinating. And it shows the Anne Frank house. It shows where they were living. And it also gives you an idea of the schedule that they kept on a daily basis. It's about 3 minutes long. So let's take a look.
In the secret annex, Anne's day began at 6:45. She would take the screens down from the windows, and then the morning ritual in the bathroom would start, as one by one the group in hiding prepared for the day. There was a strict schedule, because by 8:30 the annex had to be completely silent. That was when work began for the staff of the warehouse. They didn't know there were people hiding in the secret annex. Because the group's helpers in the office had not yet arrived, any sound might betray them. Even the toilet was a no-go area, as the soil pipe ran right through the warehouse.
Shh, Father. Quiet, Otto. Shh. Pim, it's 8:30. Come here now. You can't run the water anymore. Walk quietly.
Even after the helpers started work in the office above the warehouse, the people in hiding still had to be quiet. By then, any noises from the hiding place heard in the warehouse would seem to come from the offices. They would spend the rest of the morning reading, studying, and preparing lunch. Anne was doing a stenography course together with Margot and Peter, and also learned French, German, algebra, and history. At 12:30, the warehouse workers would go out to lunch. The helpers and the people in hiding would eat together in the annex. Then, at 1:00, they would turn on the radio for the latest news from the BBC. The helpers would stay until about 1:45, then go back to work. At that point, the people in hiding could have a nap. Anne used the time to study and to write. By about 4:00, it was time for coffee and dinner preparations would start. The warehouse workers went home at 5:30. Their helper, Bep Voskow, usually popped in after that to ask if any of them needed anything. When she, too, had left for home at 5:45, the people in hiding would spread out throughout the building. With everyone gone, they could emerge safely from their hiding place and even go into the front section of the building. Herman Van Pels would check the day's mail. Peter Van Pels fetched the bread left for them in the office. Otto Frank typed, presumably business letters. Margot and Anne did some office work for the helpers, such as filing letters, and August Van Pels and Edith Frank would cook the evening meal. They also washed themselves in the office kitchen, the only available hot water. After dinner, the group would read or chat or play games. The windows were blacked out as evening fell, and preparations for the night began at 9. Furniture had to be moved to make rooms ready to sleep in. Just as in the morning, the group followed a strict schedule for the bathroom, one after another. Anne's turn was from 9 to 9:30. After that, the secret annex gradually fell silent.
That's something, isn't it? There were certainly times in the annex of sadness and loneliness. Anne Frank worried about what would happen to her friendships, and she also yearned to be loved. After about 18 months in hiding, she wrote this: "The whole time I've been here, I've longed unconsciously and at times consciously for trust, love, and physical affection. Needing that human touch." Well, certainly writing in her diary helped her cope with periods of depression, bouts of depression. Evidently, she handled it a lot better than some of the others in the group. And she regularly expressed gratitude. She was grateful that her family had enough money for food, that they hadn't been deported like so many others. She was profoundly grateful for the people who were hiding them and who brought them food and news and words of encouragement. These are the things that helped her keep going day after day after day. But I think truly the most amazing thing about Anne Frank was her indomitable spirit. Because here she was living in one of the most horrific times in history. Yet she never lost sight of the beauty in life. And she never let go of her dreams. You know, it would be easy enough for any of us to understand how someone in that situation might lose their belief in God or their faith. But she never did. She continued to believe in God and in the essential goodness of humankind. As she famously said, "I keep my ideals because in spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart." And I think Anne had that sort of spiritual connection, we would say. She had an awareness of the magnificent I am presence within her. And she wanted other people to know that they had that in them as well. She said this. That's pretty small, isn't it? She said. I don't know if I... Everyone has inside of her a piece of good news. The good news is that you don't know how great you can be, how much you can love, what you can accomplish, and what your potential is. Amazing, amazing human being. Well, Anne and her group were discovered by the Nazis on August 4th, 1944. And all of them, except for Anne's father, perished in the German camps. Anne herself was spared the gas chambers when she was sent to Auschwitz. She later died of typhus in another German camp. And it was her father, Otto, who found her diary and had it published, and in so doing inspired the world with her story of faith and hope and resilience. Resilience. I marvel at her resilience. What do you think it was that helped Anne Frank get through that? Well, obviously there are many factors, but here are some that really stood out for me. Her ideals, her belief in a higher power, her faith that a better day would come, her gratitude, and her connection with others. Those are the same factors that I believe fuel our resilience at this time and any time in our lives. Our ideals, our belief in a higher power, our faith that a better day will come, our gratitude, and our connection with each other. All those are hugely important, but today I want to just focus for a moment on that last one, our connection with each other. Because certainly in this time of isolation, that is one of the ones that feels the most challenging. At a time when we can't be together physically, it is all the more important that we find other ways to both give and receive love and support, because we need each other. So whether it's by phone or email or social media or Zoom meetings or cards and letters, whatever it takes, whatever means we can come up with to safely be in touch with one another, it is so vitally important right now. So I'd like to invite each of you in the coming week to reach out to at least one person, hopefully more, but at least one person you might not normally connect with in whatever way you feel comfortable, just to find out how they're doing. You never know what ways that contact will make a difference in their life and in yours. And on that, I have learned that very lesson, the value of connection, recently through my growing friendship with Robert Coffin. So I think many of you know Robert. He turned 88 in March. A while back, we posted this picture of Robert, if you remember, holding this beautiful child here at Uni Renaissance, and he put this on his Facebook page. It says, "Blessed, this beautiful child liked me." Ah, oh, so sweet. Robert is such a sweetheart. Well, about a month ago, Robert started having a lot of problems because he was short of breath, and it got so severe that he couldn't catch his breath when he would just stand up or try to walk a few steps. And so some of us who were in contact with him were very worried he had COVID-19. We said, "Robert, you must go to the hospital," which he finally did. And when he got to the hospital, he learned that he doesn't have COVID-19. But then he learned that his lung had collapsed. He also learned that he needed a pacemaker. So they went in, they put the pacemaker in, and then they began working on his lung. They did surgery on his lung. He's been draining fluid from it. They went in to get it to expand again. And then last week, Robert was informed that he has mesothelioma. He has lung cancer caused by asbestos. There's a lot more to be revealed around that in terms of what the protocol will be, etc. But think about all that for a moment. That sort of chain of events, all that going on would be enough to overwhelm a lot of people. But it hasn't overwhelmed Robert. When I've called him before and he has said this more than once, I've said, "Hey, Robert, you know, how are you doing with all this?" He says this: "The one thing they can't take away is my spirit. I'm going to live in joy to the end of my life." And I have to tell you, every time I call him, he's so positive, he's so grateful, he's so upbeat. And so I say to him, "Robert, have you always been this way? Have you always been such a positive person?" He says, "Well, maybe a little bit, but especially since I started coming to Unity Renaissance about a year ago." And then he says this: "The congregation is my family. I felt that way the first time I walked in the doors. We are your family, Robert. I know you're watching today. We're here for you. And when I hang up the phone talking to him, he always says, "You're part of my family." You see, Robert is remarkably resilient. So was Anne Frank. And so are you. Don't you ever underestimate the incredible power and presence of God within you to overcome any difficulty. It is your birthright. It is your true nature. Don't you ever sell yourself short. You have incredible overcoming power within you. So know it, believe it, rely on it, and bring it forth. You are wise, you are strong, you are resilient. Whatever is confronting you in your life right now, you got this. And this pandemic, we've got this. We're going to come through it together and we'll be just fine. Emily Dickinson would say, we are being called to rise. So inspired by the examples of those who have come before us and those we are still with, and inspired by that incredible presence within us, let's go forward with strength and courage and patience and the will to do things right and to carry on. Let's turn now to our meditation.
Nice.
I invite you to get comfortable in your seat. Take a deep breath in. Release and let it go. One more time, let's do that together. Breathing in and breathing out. Feeling ourselves settle into our seat, feeling the good earth beneath us. Feeling that beautiful divine presence that is God at the very core of our being. I invite you in this moment to tune in to that presence within you, laying aside any doubts or fears, worries or concerns. Just clear them away and come home to that mighty, overcoming power within you. This is the truth of who you are. You are strong, you are courageous, you are wise, you are powerful, you are resilient. I invite you to breathe into this knowing and truly feel that power spreading in and through every cell of your being. Envision it as light, as love, as grace, as the universe cheering you on. And now open yourself to whatever guidance is yours and next steps to take, the direction to go in your situation or your life. Listen for spirit to speak to you in the silence. you, sweet Spirit, for the beautiful people in our lives and in our world who've shown us what is truly possible for us, who've shown us the way through their ideals, through their indomitable spirit. We say thank you to them, and we go on to show up as the very highest and best we can in this human life. Thank you, God, and so it is. Amen.